Hi, this is Chris, host of A Couple of Drips. Just before we start, I wanted to say a quick word about our subscribers' memberships. If you'd like to help support future episodes, you can subscribe to the show for a few pounds a month. This'll help fund production, coffee, and guest expenses. Simply click on the support button in the episode description. Cheers, and enjoy the show. Settle in and turn it up. It's time for A Couple of Drips. Coffee, conversation, and occasional quips. Here's your host, Chris Granger.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of A Couple of Drips. Commitments was an Oscar-nominated, multi-BAFTA award-winning 1991 film written by Roddy Doyle and directed by the late, great Alan Parker. My guest today is a local musician who, despite working with an incredibly dedicated bunch of musicians, heads up a show band called The Lack of Commitments. They've played as far afield as the Edinburgh Fringe. Please welcome the lovely Dave Patrick. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about the band and how it was formed and why it was formed and why the film was such a big influence on you.
Yeah. So I first came across the film in, you know, pretty much when it came out in the cinema, I went to see it. And there was something about it that just resonated with me.
Yeah.
And I hadn't been that affected since The Birth of the Beatles, which was another kind of like tribute film, which you know, got me to start playing guitar actually. But with The Commitments, when I saw it, I just thought, wow, it captured what being in a band was all about, the essence of getting lots of disparate people together, lots of different backgrounds, you know, lots of different family time, work commitments, pressures and all that.
Yeah.
Just putting them into a melting pot and seeing if you could get them.
And it is a big band. How many are in the band?
11 is our normal kind of lineup, where we have three female vocalists. There's Noz and myself that do vocals. I play guitar. We've got bass, drums, keyboards, and then three brass.
Oh, lovely.
So I mean, it's that big band sound.
The brass is going to give you that big band sound, isn't it?
That's it. But so with that, you've got all the logistics. When I saw The Commitments, I thought to myself, that's what I want to do one day. And it wasn't until I moved up here in 2015 that I actually had the opportunity to try and piece something together.
Nice. Where were you from originally then, Dave?
I'm from Devon.
Devon?
Can you
Well.
Can you detect anything there?
No.
All right. No, certain phrases.
Oh,
like,
you wasn't
right.
getting any of that. No, I was getting a bit of a London twinge. So there's obviously some kind of Londonish history there.
Yeah, I did live in London for a year, but I stayed in the southeast in a place called St Albans.
Yeah,
and I was there for about 20 years after university. Long time. And then I moved up here in 2015.
Yeah. So. What was the impetus for moving up here? Did you hate the seaside? I mean,
St Albans is definitely not by the seaside. We'll do some geography in a minute. It was like a lot of people. I mean, London is hella expensive.
Yeah,
St Albans was ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, I can imagine.
One of the most. And I was just about to have my daughter Imogen, and we needed somewhere, to move where we could get some space, adding an extra bedroom wasn't an option.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sam and I at the time loved coming up here. Sam's from here. And I first met Dave Wilde, who's also now a member of the Commitments at University, and I used to come up to Stone a lot to see him. And so it just seemed like the ideal place.
Yeah, Stone is a lovely place as well, isn't it? I mean, I was saying to you earlier, before we started, that, you know, I moved here as a stopgap and kind of fell in love with the place, you know, because it's got everything you could possibly want, sort of thing. So, brilliant.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
All together now.
1, 2, 3, 4. Coffee time, it's coffee time. It doesn't matter if it's your place or mine. Coffee they call the wine of therapy.
So if Dave can stop laughing at the ident, he's going to tell us what we're drinking today.
Jesus, should be drinking something a bit stronger, I think. Okay, so we're drinking Pike Place today.
Yeah, and Dave's a white coffee man, so I made flat whites rather than the usual black coffee.
I mean, yeah, you say I'm a white coffee man. I do like an espresso in the morning, you know.
Oh, very nice.
Get me going. But,
very nice.
So Pike Place was by Starbucks, and it's the original location in 1971 when Starbucks came to be, came into existence, and that was in Seattle.
Yeah. Very nice. What do you think of it, Dave?
Do you know, it's got a fruity, almost nutty, chocolatey kind of... I don't know. It just tastes like coffee.
Yeah, it tastes like coffee, doesn't it? Yeah. Moving swiftly on. So what do you drink at home, Dave? What's your normal... am I going to regret asking this?
No, you're not. I mean, people might regret hearing this because it's incredibly boring, but I've got one of those awful Dolce Gusto machines, and I have the cafe au lait pod.
Oh,
yes. The brown one.
Yeah.
Right? I won't buy any of the other ones because they've all got sweetener in them.
They're
horrible.
Yeah.
But this one I can get
it's
on.
It's real coffee in it as
and
well.
And it actually tastes approximating like something that's being produced by a barista.
Yeah.
So,
excellent.
Yeah, so that's what I tend to do.
Excellent. Very
but
nice.
I feel awful because obviously all the plastic pods going into.
I mean, the thing with the Dolce Gusto is you can recycle, you can send the pods back to them, but you have to order the bags from them in order to to send them back to them, kind of thing.
Everything seems like, who in their right mind would do that?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to be a special kind of organized person.
Yeah, exactly.
Ordering.
I never did.
Obsessive.
I had a Dolce Gusto machine and I never did that. Never did that. So do you have a favorite coffee shop? Do you favour the chains or do you like the independents? And do you have one that you particularly hang out in?
I like Cafe No. 1 in Stafford, which is quite...
Oh, I don't know that. Tell me more.
Is it Cafe Number One?
I think I did. Opposite the Ancient High House.
Yeah, it's kind of a chain.
Yeah, I do know. I went to a comedy gig there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's pretty nice. I'm not going to be po-faced about it. I do go to Starbucks and Cafe Nero, but I'll always try and seek out an indie place to get coffee.
Yeah, you can't. I think what the chains have done for coffee in the UK is they bought good quality. They've set the standard. They've set the bar for good quality coffee. Because until Starbucks arrived in the UK, you just go into a cafe and get an instant coffee. And now every cafe has kind of an espresso machine and makes sort of half decent coffee. So they've done that. But at the end of the day, you can't beat an independent coffee shop, you know, with a bit of character, a bit of personality, some nice home baking and stuff.
You know, actually, some of the staff in the like the Nero's and places, they're lovely people, aren't they?
Yeah, and, definitely.
I mean, you know, there are idiots as well in some of them, but you know, you get that in every place. So I'm not going to single out.
You're going to get that in every establishment. Yeah, absolutely. Cheers. Hi there, and thanks for listening to A Couple of Drips. If you like what we do and would like to help support future episodes, then you can do so by buying us a coffee. One-off donations or memberships are available. Just go to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/couple of drips. Thanks for your support. So you've got some other projects, Dave, haven't you? When you're not doing your day job and when you're not doing the lack of commitments, there's a couple of other projects that you've got on the go, isn't there?
So I run another function band called the Love Junkies, and that's been going since I hate to say it, 1999. There was one point where we were doing like 50 weddings a year, and I was just pretty much maxed out on that, and that was kind of like my social life at weekends. But we got pretty slick. We're a four piece and we just went out, and that's where I really honed my love of live music and honed, you know, how to do all of the admin and all of the stuff. I was the band secretary guitarist and backing vocalist, but we were quite slick and we could be in and out and set up quite well. So that's that. I also at the moment I play for an agency called Amazing Live, and they do Blues Brothers. So sometimes I'll go out and do Blues Brothers gigs. They also have another thing called Scar Madness. Those
love
gigs
a bit
are
of Scar. Yeah,
I had an absolutely magnificent gig last year at the Sausage and Cider Festival, whereby actually we were lower down the list. But
sounds like my kind of festival.
It's fantastic. One of the bands had to go off and do another gig, so we got bumped up to the headline slot.
Oh, nice.
And I was thinking...
Extra sausage and cider for you.
Expecting to see Oasis. And in the end, we gave them a Scar set, and they loved it.
My favourite band, Oasis.
And also sometimes I will be moonlighting for them in 80s, 90s stuff, but that's good. I'm also in another band called The Chebs, and we do stuff on the coast, playing mainly Butlins.
You don't hang about, do you? Quite busy.
I like, if I'm not busy doing like a Commitments or Love Junkies, I will, I'm a bit of a gig haul, really. I'll take any offer. Really.
Yeah, absolutely. So
You've
got a few recordings out, including a live one with a lack of commitments, which I'll put in the description below the episode. I'll put all the links for that. But the Love Junkies stuff, where do you record that?
Well, the Love Junkies is, I did a 2019 album. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I called it something ridiculous like Live on the Blue Dot, which was just for want of a better name. But that's got about 36 songs, I think, which I recorded and mastered actually in 2019.
Yeah.
And with two different lineups of the band, because we were doing this transgression between the South and the North.
Yeah.
I used a brand new desk that I brought, a digital desk, and it enabled me to capture all the stems.
Brilliant.
I don't want to bark on and get too nerdy about but essentially I was able to take the stems, take those into my digital audio workstation, which is Logic, and put them together, put some basic settings, EQs and stuff, balance it up and edit things in and out.
Those portable desks sometimes are fabulous for capturing stuff in places where you wouldn't normally record, kind of thing.
It was a revelation.
Just taking it back with you. Yeah. And not having to carry a computer around.
I did exactly the same with the lack of commitment as well. I recorded one gig and I don't know, but in the early 2000s, if you'd have said, oh, you can get 24 different feeds into one kind of like USB stick from this desk and record it simultaneously without any dropout, any, you know, 24K, you'd have just gone, no.
You couldn't.
But that's what it got. So I think that's liberated a lot of musicians and enabled them to capture their live performances and produce them. And that's all that I did with the
Definitely. And of course, it's changed the face of releasing music as well. You know, it's no longer reliant on a record label to put stuff out there. You can put stuff out yourself independently.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great for original bands. We don't tend to see so many of those at the moment. And I held my hands up. You know, I'm guilty of milking the tribute bands act. You know, especially with the lack of commitments and Blues Brothers stuff. But the Love Junkies is at least a mix.
Yeah, it is hard to get people to a gig of original music though, unless you wrote the music and you've had a big hit with it. You know, it's much easier to get people to, oh, party band, they're playing songs that I know. You know, it's much easier to guarantee bums on seats, kind of thing.
I know, but it becomes one of these sad self-fulfilling prophecies that if there aren't people out there playing their own original music, how are these bands going to get, you know, the breaks? It's just, you know, maybe it's an old-fashioned notion, maybe it's just the way it is, and people are still producing and writing music. But maybe they're not gigging it so much. They're just releasing it on Bandcamp or whatever it might be.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I was having a conversation on the last episode with Jamie about the reemergence of vinyl and the regrowth of vinyl. And because bands for years were having to just tour and stuff because they weren't making any money off the streaming services. They were only making money off tour tickets. But hopefully with the regrowth of vinyl, we might see some... We might see some new albums coming out from old artists who haven't released anything new for 20 years, you know.
Yeah, you'd like to see that, wouldn't you?
That would be nice,
I'd like to see the reward going back to the creatives and less of the, you know, the kind of like evil supervillains that run these massive streaming companies.
Absolutely.
I'm not suggesting that they're all like that, but, you know, platforms like Bandcamp at least make sure that a fair proportion of the proceeds go back to the artist.
What are your interests? What makes you tick? I want to get inside the head of Dave Patrick here.
Really? I think you're one of the few people who want... you're sure it's a dark thing that goes on there. I've got three wonderful children, and I spend a lot of my time cooking and cleaning and running about after them making sure that...
Do you want to give them a shout out?
Yes, Hannah, who's... 17, Ben, who's 14, and Immy, who's 7. And they're all at school.
A lovely spread of ages. Very nice. Yeah, lovely.
It is. No, it's very nice. It's nice. Honestly, I don't know what I've done, but they're great kids. And,
brilliant.
You know, I mean, Hannah is just like, she takes the mic out of me sometimes. And, but it's lovely.
My sister's a Hannah. I think it's a Hannah thing. Definitely.
But yeah, there's that kind of like maturity.
Brilliant.
Nice. No, we've all been very happy since we kind of like came up here.
Brilliant. So when we're talking about hobbies and interests and stuff, you mentioned Father Ted, and I thought there was just like a recurring Irish theme going on here with the lack of commitments. Is there something you want to share there?
Cheeky gobshite. I'm not going to try and do an Irish accent. It'll be
how
awful.
Did you know my nickname?
Father Ted. I think. All right. Yeah. There was the Divine Comedy connection with Neil Hannon, who wrote the theme tune to Father Ted.
Of course, yes.
But I discovered Father Ted first. It was on the telly. It was funny. And there had been nothing kind of like that. I mean,
yeah.
I think a lot of people mix it up with The Vicar of Dibley, but it's nothing.
No,
it's nothing like
Graham Linehan's absolutely genius.
And Arthur Matthews, it's subversive comedy, and it's extremely stupid.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it does take it out of organised religion a little bit. And,
yeah, absolutely.
I think at that point...
I'm all for that.
It needed a bit of a kick in.
The Catholics
don't really have a particularly great record in terms of priests and money laundering and all of that
sort
of
stuff. Answerability,
And that just, yeah. And Dermot Morgan was just
fantastic.
I mean, you couldn't have put together a better kind of like show script.
No, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. It's not Christmas until you've watched the lingerie department special, is it? That's when Christmas properly starts, when you've watched the Christmas special of the priest trying to escape the lingerie department.
You've got about 15 minutes of them just in there. It's supremely, supremely silly. There are a lot of artists who turn up in that as well, Claire Grogan from Alton Images. But my favourite episode is the Eurovision Song Contest.
Fantastic.
And
of course, my lovely horse, Neil Hannon.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, he's the king of these kind of incidental bits of music.
Every time I've been to see the Divine Comedy, people just yell, "Play my lovely horse, play my lovely horse." Yeah. And he did a live recording a couple of years ago, and someone got some, and he was abroad somewhere, and someone goes, "Happy horse." And he goes, "That's the best I've ever heard." But we did actually get him to play it once. He had an 18 piece orchestra with him, and we still got him to play it. So.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, so I love a bit of Divine Comedy. And the theme tune, Songs of Love, it's obviously the middle eight is that.
I got the Casanova album and didn't realise that Songs of Love was Divine Comedy.
Yeah.
Until where do I recognise this theme tune from? And then lyrics come in and you're like, oh, okay. And then the middle eight comes in, which is the actual Father Ted theme tune, and you're like, the penny dropped.
I'm sure that happened to a lot of people. Top tip, anybody listening to this, if you've not sought out the Divine Comedy's Casanova album, check it out.
Legendary. Absolutely legendary.
It's just a beautiful piece of music. And listen to it in order as well.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. You've
controversial.
Got to, oh, I'm a vinyl collector, so I'm all for you have to sit down and listen to an album from start to finish in the right order. But listen to the whole back catalogue if you can anyway. It's great.
So Irish Connections. I love Father Ted, love Divine Comedy. Love the Commitments. Sorry, it's the lack of the Commitments.
The lack of Commitments,
It's there now before.
Commitment phobia, I call them. the thing is, it's lack of commitments, but they're all very committed. I know them. I know quite a few of the people in your band. I even did A-levels with one of them. And they're all very committed.
Who's that?
Callum. Did A-level music together.
He gets around Callum, actually.
He does, yeah.
I don't like to talk ill of
lovely
him.
Lovely chap. Lovely lad. I could tell you some stories of when we were in Germany doing hair.
Off the air? Yeah.
Yeah, off the air, definitely. Definitely.
So I feel like I should name check them all, really, but there's a lot of them. But, Tessa, Beth, Tina and Ella have been absolutely fantastic. And
I know Tessa and I know Ella because I used to be in a band with James Blake with Ella. So
And with Noz at the front, it's just such a powerful vocal lineup.
Yeah, and, he's great frontman. Yeah.
I'm not you know, that's the stick of the band. That's the draw of the band. But I think once people kind of like see that front line and kind of come to one of our gigs, and then they realise that everybody else is having just as, you know, on stage,
yeah,
having just as
he's
good
having
time.
As much fun as the crowd.
And
I definitely get that vibe.
We all get along. I mean, we've had some adventures, and yeah. It's been 6 years now.
I mean, it's your band, but you don't come across as the front man in it. You're quite happy taking a little bit of it. You're there chugging away on the guitar at the back, and is that a shyness thing, or is it just that you enjoy it more when you're kind of stood back a bit and kind of watching everything happen around you?
Now, it's funny you should mention that, actually. Somebody saw a video of us at Empire Rochdale last week and said, "You've got half the stage there, Dave. The rest of the singers are like cramped, you know. Like, and what are you doing? You're just like, you got your wireless outfit and you're walking around." But yeah, normally it's not. People have come to see the band as a whole, I'm not the greatest mover, and I'm not going to do anything. If you come and watch me, I'm not going to be like Yannick Gers with Iron Maiden, you know, slinging the guitar around me. But you know, there are a few moves, but no, I will prefer to be tempted to do
some Blues Brothers style tap dancing while you're
Jesus. Yeah. We're moving on.
Harmonica in a briefcase. Yeah,
I would like to do other things, but yeah, I'm in my comfort zone when there's a guitar
definitely.
In front of me.
Guitar of choice?
I'm a Fender Strat guy.
Good man.
I'm a Fender Strat. However, I've just...
If I were a guitarist, that would be my guitar of choice.
It's really flexible and versatile. But I have just got myself an Epiphone Les Paul. Copy, which
nice.
Which, I mean, I didn't want to bust the bank. I would love to. I'd love to get a
you get a nice tone out of a hollow bodied.
It's nice, and I've been playing that for a few gigs.
Very
so
nice.
It's a good kind of like
very
backup.
Nice. Talking of gigs, interesting places you've played.
What with the lack of commitments? I think one of the best things we did was go to the Edinburgh Festival, and
lovely.
We played a couple of venues up there. Stramash was one of the popular venues that operates all year round. It's not just a fringe thing. So that was it. We did a lovely gig there, and then one of the weird things is with the fringe, you have these showcase stages dotted all around the town.
And
we booked our slot on one of them, and it was they had an engineer, but they said, right, we've only got two mics and two plugs, so nothing else can be amplified.
Yeah,
and you can't.
So it was all backline.
You can't drown out the other performers.
Wow.
And Harvey, the drummer, was there, and like I said, do you want to use your brushes? And he went, do I? and kind of like, so we went on, and yeah, God, we made some noise.
Yeah.
And everybody shared the microphones. We did about four or five songs. And, you know, after the last one, they just finally pulled the plug and said, look, the other performers are kind of like getting drowned out. You know, a few jugglers and mimes down the road.
Yeah.
But during that time, we'd got like about 1,000 people
in
front of us.
Great.
Just stopped, just watched that sunset.
Yeah.
So that was one of the nicest events. And we took a few pictures. Most of which are on our website, really.
Yeah.
And those are some of the happiest pictures that I've got of the band.
Brilliant.
There were 12 of us there, actually.
Nice, nice. So, yeah. I'll put the link to the website in the episode description. So one of your other projects, Dave, is Stoneville. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that? Because I know very little about that.
Yeah, okay, I will do. I mean, it was I've always written music in my career, and I suppose, you know, in between, kind of like when you're busy doing a lot of function stuff, sometimes that can take a bit of a back seat. So I'd collated songs from probably about 2010 onwards, and obviously lockdown, all of that sort of stuff happening. I just made a resolution to let's get them done.
Yeah.
And I spent about 6 months recording, arranging, producing, and at the end of that period, I ended up with about 25 songs.
Brilliant.
And I'd really, honestly, I was burning the candle at both ends, or whatever the phrase is. But I was having some really late nights, and I wasn't making myself particularly well. But
yeah.
At the end of it, I've got these songs, and they're in a good condition.
Yeah.
Now, what am I going to do with them? Because I didn't feel I'm not a drummer.
Mm.
I'm not a keyboard player. I can't. Mm. So I was thinking, well, should we get some people in to play these things?
So initially you were playing everything.
Yeah. You know what it's like. You know, you'll slow down a keyboard part or just program it in. You know,
program
just to get
in.
the rough kind of like patch. But
dragging the MIDI
things
around on screen.
But it was all rough, all demos. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was pleased with them, and I liked a lot of the tunes. But so I thought, yeah, let's go for it.
So did you poach some musicians from the other projects for that?
the revelation for me with the Stoneville project was when I thought, well, I'm not going to sing this myself. I'm not going to do this myself. Let's get some people involved.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've got a good backing vocal voice, but it's not a strong lead voice.
Sure.
So I thought, okay. So I started to ask people if they'd come perform on it. And it was some people that I'd known throughout, you know, stuff, time with the Love Junkies and before. And so I asked a few then. And in the end, I managed to collate about 30 different artists.
Brilliant.
And what I did was sent them the demos and got them to record remotely their bits, and they would send them back. And so I ended up with this kind of like hodgepodge of lots of different stems, lots of different parts. I put it together and I thought, geez, what am I going to do with that? I can't produce this. It was that realization that led me to seek out an ex-neighbor of mine and a very good session player called Dave Marks. And Dave had listened to four of the tracks and said, I like these. I'm happy to play bass on them. My mate is free on drums, Paul Stewart. Would you like him to, you know, replace your MIDI parts with those?
Fantastic.
Your MIDI drums, with a live kit. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And then he said, do you mind if I just tidy some of the arrangements up a little bit? Mm. And before I knew it, he'd kind of made all the production decisions on these.
Yeah,
he sent them back to me and said, are you happy with that? And what he'd done is chop bits up, you know, the sort of stuff that a good producer does properly.
Yeah, yeah.
Takes sections out, maybe just tweaks here and there, suggests kind of like, you know, removing 15 guitar parts when you can have like, you know, just one or two.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's what he did. And
sometimes it takes a third party to see the bigger picture kind of thing, because when you can't see the wood for the trees when you're in the middle of it, you know.
I mean, what I'd love you to do here, I mean, just if you could, if you do get the chance in edit, just play a clip of When Will I Return, which was a track that I sent to him. And he came back and said, yeah, this is a country song.
Yeah.
And I went, I hate country. And he said, yeah, you might do, but this will work as a country song. Trust me. And blow me. What he sent back was like just incredible, and it took the song in a completely different direction. It was still the same song in terms of its heart and its and you know, the lyrically and the kind of like instrumentation, but he'd done some crazy things, and one of those crazy things was turning it into giving that kind of like country and western
tone.
Just like paper. More I want to know, somehow I won't let it show.
And you know, the rest of the album isn't country and western.
Yeah.
But it's quite an eclectic mix, and there's lots of different styles. So
nice.
But yeah. So yeah, actually, one of my good mates, Clint, is singing on that with Tina, his partner, and Tina from the Lack of Commitments.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah,
it's tiny lovely. Tina. She's
Tina Rabina, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, she's changed my life, man. She's a wonderful person. She is. She's and such a massive talent. And she does a couple of solo songs on the
And so shy as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So with all these projects, when do you fit time in for all the running?
Okay. Nice link. I like that. Yeah. So I used to, that was one of the things that I did over the last 10 years that was the least kind of like depressing way of keeping myself fit. I actually went out, started running, and found that, okay, I'm all right at it. And it doesn't make me feel utterly, utterly depressed or soul destroyed. So let's go out. And eventually I kind of like pursued that to, you know, people get a bit obsessive.
You didn't start doing marathons, did you?
Yeah, I did. I became one of those kind of like fitness nerds who posted up their times and stuff. And,
the Strava app.
Just being out for a 20-minute. Well, I was using Nike Fitness, but Strava's taken over, hasn't it? So I did the Edinburgh Marathon first, and then I signed up for a marathon in Toronto, and that was when I knew shit had got serious. Because
nice, what a great city to run in, though. Start the CN Tower and end up at the airport.
It was just like one of the finest vistas of my life was running through downtown Toronto.
Yeah,
just lots of great people either side, you know, cheering you on, and just. Running through that, and I actually had my in-ears and I was listening to Rush at the time. Moving pictures.
Of course, as you would.
So you got to have something to inspire you.
Yeah, definitely.
They don't like it anymore if you've got headphones on for these races. But
oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They kind of like think it's a bit of a health and safety issue.
Oh, okay. Fair enough, I suppose. But they should be closing the streets, you know.
And that running stuff culminated in me doing the London Marathon 2019, just pre-COVID. But in 2015, I did my anterior cruciate ligament, and I didn't think I was going to run again after that.
Yeah.
It's changed me, but I did the London Marathon in 2019, and then I retired.
Yeah.
There's
a point, isn't there, where you go enough's enough.
I'm not getting any younger.
No.
My knees aren't getting any healthier.
Yeah.
Nor my hips. I've taken up spinning now.
And running to Chaz and Dave wasn't quite the same as running to Rush, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Is that a smooth segue into Chaz and Dave or not?
There's no smooth segue into Chaz and Dave. There's no smooth transition. I guess in Toronto, it would either be Rush or Bryan Adams, wouldn't it? And I think you made the right choice.
Yeah. There's lots of Canadian bands, aren't there? But
I'm sure there are.
Rush is definitely my favourite.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Neil Peart.
Yeah.
Bless him.
My girlfriend will love that because she absolutely hates Rush. With
all
a
right,
passion.
Just go home and put
with a passion.
A Farewell to Kings on you.
Yeah. Climb to fame, climb to fame. It's your chance to drop a name. Trying to outdo each other's kind of lame. One-upmanship is the only aim. Climb to fame, climb to fame. Climb to fame, climb to fame. While I was playing that ident, Dave actually said to me that was quite Partridge-esque. There's a story behind that ident. You'll be familiar with John Shuttleworth.
Yes, huge fan.
The great Graham Fellows.
Yeah.
He does another character called Brian Appleton.
Yes.
Brian Appleton's History of Rock and Roll, and he's a media studies lecturer in the Newcastle and Lyme area, which is very near to where we record. And that, I have to say, was the inspiration when I was recording that either.
That makes a lot more sense.
So claim to fame, Dave. You've already mentioned the Divine Comedy, but I believe you met Neil once.
Yes, I did, in Edinburgh, and he was up there promoting an album or promoting something. I don't know. He was being interviewed. It was a BBC radio thing, I think.
Yeah.
The questions went out to the audience, of which I was a keen member, being a huge fan. Yes, and the attention focused on me, and they said, "Yes, your question, please, sir." I said, "Oh," and I froze.
It's easily done, isn't it?
And then the carefully crafted question that I had been working on mentally for the last 2 hours came out as, "What are you working on?" What? And it was like that stuttered and that kind of like, and he just looked at me like I was I was a clown, and he said, "A model."
Brilliant.
And then there was silence, utter silence. Yeah. And then, the interviewer said, okay, let's another question, please. and that was it, you know. So never meet your heroes.
No.
However, when you do meet your heroes, ask them a bloody sensible question.
Yeah.
Or don't bother.
Yeah. I've been there, I've done that.
I've got over it, you know. I've brought all his albums since. And I still love him to pieces.
Yeah.
But, sorry, Neil.
It
was a bit cool. We've
all done it. We've all embarrassed ourselves in front of people. I found the best thing when you meet your heroes is just to have a don't talk about what they do. Just have a completely inane conversation with them. So I had 15 minutes with Brian May about car parking charges.
That's a whole new podcast.
That's a whole podcast in itself.
I imagine he got quite animated. Really, Brian does. Where his heart
he was sleep. Not happy about being charged £48 to park there for the afternoon.
Oh, fair
London
fair
prices. Mm. So I believe you've done a few interesting tours as well. I believe there's a short young lady that you toured with.
Oh, I did a few interesting things in the early noughties, I believe the kids call it. So in 2006, I was asked to fill in for a good mate of mine, Chris Wong, to play guitar with Toya Wilcox.
Brilliant.
for a few gigs.
Robert too her. Busy that week, was he?
Yeah, absolutely. Seek out the clips, everybody. Seek out the Toya and Robert clips. They're absolutely fantastic.
Oh yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, it was just I was suddenly asked by Chris, "Dave, can't do these gigs. Can you come in and fill in?"
Yeah.
And there I was suddenly. I was
a substitute Dave.
I was in Eastbourne, and there was Toya Wilcox, and she was complaining about how loud my guitar was on stage. But I did a
bloody lead guitarist. Always.
I was kind of. She's a lovely person. I was a little bit awestruck because in the 80s, I just used to love listening to, It's a Mystery and that sort of stuff, you know, Jungles of Jupiter.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. If you haven't checked out Robert and Toya's Sunday Lunch, is it called? I'll put a link in the description anyway. It's
good to, she's really, she's just busy and she's just, have you watched any of Get Back, the Beatles?
I haven't yet. Everyone keeps going on at me, but I haven't got a Disney subscription at the moment. I must get one because I've heard it's amazing.
So I watched that, and I watched the first episode, and I found it enthralling, amazing. The way Peter Jackson had put obviously hours and hours and hours of kind of like unloved archive footage and mixed it with the audio tapes, in some cases, out of sync to make more sense of the context and use some new kind of like techniques to eke out some of the nasty frequencies and hone in on conversations that the members of the band were having. But what I like and what resonated with me more than anything was the fact that those four guys genuinely worked as a band. They'd been through like 10 years at least together and they were a family, and they did all the things that families do. They bickered, they praised, they antagonized. They encouraged, and it was interesting to see the kind of relationships, you know, especially between George and Paul, which I thought was quite, you know,
complicated.
And he was just at that point, it was kind of, sorry guys, I need to do my own thing. I've got some cracking songs, but I can't.
That frustration in that creative environment when you've got ideas, but you're not with the right people to see those to fruition, kind of thing.
Now, I'm not going to compare myself to the Beatles. I'll let others do that. However, my first band were called the insanely named Ralph of the Arb. And we were based down in Devon, and it was in my teenage years, and we were all young, and we all thought that we could do absolutely, absolutely anything. You know, the world was ours. And we used to have this barn, and every night, pretty much without fail, we would go up to the barn, we'd have our instruments there, and we would play, and we would jam it out. And that's what Get Back, you know, watching four guys just thrashing out ideas was like. I mean, honestly, the stuff that we came up with was pretty rubbish, but it was a wonderful time in my life.
I've had similar experiences myself. I mentioned being in a band with Ella earlier and working with, I don't know if you know James Blake and that, and we just had a little studio up in Barlaston, and we kind of lived in there for a while, of thing, and just tea and coffee facilities there, and we'd be in there every night, and that camaraderie when you're working on a project for a long time, and it's a real kind of labour of love as well, but it becomes almost like an extended family sort of thing. There's something to be said for that. What were your band in Devon called?
It's a lovely thing, isn't it? They were called Ralph of the Arb.
Ralph of the Arb. Yeah. Ralph of the Arb playing in the barn. That's brilliant.
That was where I got my enjoyment of just touring, and we just used to play local pubs and clubs.
Brilliant.
It was great. I didn't know you'd been in a band with Ella. Yeah. I mean, Ella is one of the vocalists on Stoneville as well.
She's great.
There's a wonderful track called Fears, Hopes and Dreams, which she just absolutely aces. It's beautiful.
Fantastic. So, yeah, she's got an amazing voice. Yeah.
There's a kind of like richness and depth to it that's especially in the lower registers that I really, because we recorded her in Tower Studios.
Yeah.
They've got a decent room there.
Yeah.
Decent soundproofing, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. But,
that was amazing to hear her capabilities. I'd give you a rundown of the gigs really that we've got coming up.
Yes, please do. If you know them.
I haven't got a list in front of me. The next 6 months for us, for the lack of commitments, is going to be very busy. Some of the highlights are playing the Rock and Bowl Festival, Market Drayton, and we've got the regular gigs at the Empire in Rochdale, and also at Level One in Sutton Coalfield. And we've also got a gig at the Diamond. And so, you know, we're doing these kind of like club venues that, in fact, one of the Commitments tribute bands, Commitments with a K, have just retired. So we're kind of like picking up their work.
Okay.
And one of our ambitions this year is to actually get Dave Finnegan, the original drummer,
why not?
Nicker, right?
Yeah.
Because we're kind of like in touch on social media,
good.
And we want to get him to come and sing with us.
Yeah.
So Harvey, our drummer, sent him a message the other day and said, "So when are you going to come and sing with us, Dave?" And he said, "Anytime. I'll be there anytime."
Oh, brilliant!
And I'm not sure if he's going to take us up on that. It's a bit like waiting for Wilson Pickett. You know, that's the whole theme of the Commitments.
Yeah.
And just is he going to turn up at the end of the gig to do Try a Little Tenderness?
That'd be good, wouldn't it? That would be amazing.
You know, no disrespect to Noz, but I think if Dave Finnegan did turn up, we'd probably just stand back.
Yeah, I think so. Just stand back and watch, and stand back and let it happen. So, I mean, an 11-piece band, what are the logistics of that? Do you have a tour coach or vans, or how do you get 11 people plus drum kits, guitars, amps, basses, horns? How do you get those to? Because you're doing gigs a fair old distance of gigs. You're not just kind of playing locally.
Yeah. So you ask, You ask any of the band members and they'll say they prefer when Dave doesn't have to do the sound, when I don't have to do the PA and sound, because I'm running about like a little bit of a stress.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
And I'm trying not to stress everybody out, but sometimes, you know, the time pressures get...
Yeah, of course.
So if I'm doing the PA, everything fits in the Ford Galaxy. If there's another company doing the PA, then fine, you know.
Yeah.
But everybody tends to make their own way. I'd love to tell you that there was some band love bus or, you know, that goes out and we all travel together and we're all...
Yeah.
But it tends to be make your own way kind of thing. Yeah.
Because I remember I saw you at Granville's a couple of years ago and the horn section had come up from Bristol at the time. I don't know if it's the same horn section now, but there's a couple of horn guys and they said they'd just come up from Bristol that day.
It probably would have been Cambridge, actually.
It's all right.
But Paul Garner and Jules Lanny Moore, they're in the early days, we didn't actually have a fully formed brass section. Mm. And I played with those guys with the Love Junkies and they're part of this wonderful kind of jazz brass community down in Cambridge, and they actually came up and helped us out, and it was really lovely to play with them because they're absolutely mint.
Probably was Cambridge, somewhere down south, southwest. Yeah,
you northerners, everything's the same, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. That's true. That's very true. Thanks for listening to A Couple of Drips. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can on Twitter. Just search for @CoupleOfDrips. Well, Dave, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here today. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope you have.
Yeah, I'm sorry to take up too much of your time, really.
Well, no, that's absolutely fine. You can never take up enough. But I'll put links to all your band stuff and details of how people can find the band or book the band in the links. Links to various people and things that we've mentioned along the way. But thank you very much for being my guest today. Thank you very much, Dave Patrick.
Thank you.
Listening to A Couple of Drips. The show was conceived and presented by Chris Granger and is a Cup the Mic production.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, Chris here. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support the production of future episodes, then subscriptions are available. Simply click on the support button in the episode description. See you next time.